Hi, I'm Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Your Performing Edge TV, talking here with, I'm so excited today to have Bob Anderson here, founder of Runner's World Magazine. He's been running for 50 years and now doing a documentary called A Long Run, celebrating 50 years of running and racing. The documentary can be found at alongrun.com. That's the letter A, longrun.com. And, I'm so excited to have you here, Bob.
Yeah, fantastic, Dr. Joanne. Glad to be here and glad to be still running after 50 years.
Yeah, let's talk about that, your 50 race challenge here. You're going to be doing 50 races this year, right? 350 miles, and the goal is to average under 7 minutes a mile. Is that right?
That's right. I wanted to do something special, and after running for 50 years, I was thinking, gosh, what could I do? And so I came up with the idea of running the 50 races, which is nearly a race every weekend. And but I wanted to add a little bit more challenge to it, so I decided that I would need to average 7 miles per race, or 350 miles total racing. And then my goal is to run under 7 minutes per mile on an average. And and right now I'm just under that. I think I'm at 6:57 pace right now so far after close to about 100 miles in.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah, what made you think you could do average under 7 minutes a mile when you're setting that goal?
Well, I've run a lot faster than that in the past, but as we age, and I'm 64 and going to be 65 at the end of the year, I basically came up with a pace that is equivalent to about 80% on an age-graded basis on an average, and 80% is more like more or less like a national level sort of thing. So I just wanted to have something that I knew would push me something I could get my head around. I really feel confident that I'm going to continue to do that. I just didn't want to have a challenge that would be something that a lot of people could do. I just wanted to have something a little bit more challenging, and that's why I came up with the sub-7-minute average.
Yeah, that's that's a lot of races to do all year, plus you've interviewed me on your documentary, A Long Run.
Yeah, totally.
And we talked about, how grueling it could be, the mental, physical part, the nutritional part, getting enough rest at night, and, putting all of that together, plus the travel and the logistics.
Well, in fact, actually, a real challenge is just keeping it all straight. Because I don't like to be driving the morning of a race, particularly, for this particular challenge. So a lot of times, we're staying at least one night, near the race, coordinating all of that activity and obviously getting entered in the race and doing all those things. So, just the logistics by itself is a lot. And what's really great is I have a good team behind me. My wife, Catherine, is very supportive, and she's a good photographer as well, so she does a lot of the still photography. But it's really great to have her support, and she also does a lot of the bookings and all that. And then my son is actually the director of our documentary that we're doing, and it's really great to be working with him on this project. He had been living down south for a while, down in the L.A. area, and we had not been able to do a lot of projects like this together in the past, but now to be able to do this is great. But one thing I wanted to mention is that, Dr. Joanne, is that definitely as we sat down and talked and you gave me some real ideas and also some of your training aids, and for sure I know my last half marathon, I just kept thinking of all the advice that you gave me, and absolutely for sure, that particular race, which was just 2 weeks ago, that was a real mental, approach to that. I had to just keep thinking of a lot of the things that you had mentioned to me, and sure enough, it got me through, and I just on that particular race, I was just barely over 7 minutes per mile. But your advice, Dr. Julianne, really helped me out for sure.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah, it was just as a sports psychologist, I'm always, you know, really interested in the mental part of training and racing. And I was wondering what particular things we did, you know, my coaching, what kinds of things did they help you with?
Yeah, I tell you, you know, one thing that you had mentioned was the idea of the magnet approach, where instead of just, you know, closing the gap on the runner in front of you, is to think in terms of that runner has a magnet, and you just kind of let that kind of pull you to them. And like the finish line is a big magnet, and you just kind of let the finish pull you to the finish line. And I kept thinking of that approach, and quite honestly, it really worked. And another thing is just, you know, just the whole aspect of staying focused and not losing your focus and breaking down, you know, the puzzle and you know, basically, you know, not looking at it as 13 miles, but looking at it as, you know, in the different pieces, and taking each piece as it comes and being able to perform well at that piece. And, you know, just keeping positive and also beforehand, just thinking in terms of visualization of what you think you can do and then pretty much do it. In fact, that's one of the things for sure that over the last few races, I really have focused on what I thought I could do. And like in the half marathon, I wanted to, you know, be 1:31, and I did 1:31 at Carlsbad just on Sunday. I wanted to go 20 minutes and 25 seconds, and I ran 20 minutes and 22 seconds. So,
wow.
And so, you know, just that positive thinking and that energy and you know, just really recognize that your mind can really pull you through a lot of things.
That's great. Yeah, Bob, I know you've been using my visualization CDs too.
Absolutely. Right? And, you know, just listening to that. And also I really like the, not just the words, it's almost a hypnotic sort of presentation, which is really great, but it's also the music that has been selected, and it just all comes together, and it just kind of, it puts you in a frame of mind that for me, you know, I really found a real good value, and I look forward to continuing to, you know, to listen to, you know, the different segments, and really use that as giving me additional power, because, I mean, I've been a pretty kind of mental-oriented person in the past, but and I've always felt that it's amazing what your mind can do, but I think it also can be very helpful to be working with someone, you know, like yourself, to be able to just kind of give a fresh approach to the whole outlook of how important the mental aspect of running is.
Right. I think you can, I mean, our minds are so powerful, and you can really... Yeah, your mind can, if you let it, you know, there's so much negative stuff that can go on, and, you know, thinking about, I'm so tired, or I'm, this is such a long, grueling event, you know, like the 50 races could be, you know, long, it could be really stretched out, and you could look at it as this thing is going on and on forever, or you can use your mind to just focus on one race at a time and make it a kind of a mind game, right?
Totally, you know, and you just, you know, you make everything, you know, play where, and it just, and you think in terms of, like, instead of making it a, you know, something that you just start thinking, oh my gosh, it's another race this weekend, and it, I mean, you just don't, you know, you don't go there. You just think in terms of the fun aspect of it. You know, the fact that, you know, that, you know, in finishing one race, and then you're already ready to move on to the next, and yeah, and you definitely don't get into that whole thing where you let your mind start thinking, oh my gosh, another race. You know what I mean? Where you know, no matter how you're feeling or whatever, is the excitement that there is another race coming. But at the same time, you don't want to lose your focus, because you definitely want to make sure that you do the very best job you can at the race at hand, so that you're not all of a sudden, you know, a month down the way, and you do the very best job you can. But then once you finish that and once you post that result, you know, then you let your mind go to the next race. And what I'm trying to do is I'm not looking at doing any easy races. I'm looking at, and so far every race I've done, I've pushed. And what I really want to do is that I want to push every single race and get the most out of every single race, recognizing, you know, that there are some outside forces, may it be wind or may it be that, you know, you haven't really put in enough training mileage, because that's one of the tough things, is having enough time to train in between. But again, you just basically focus on that race, and you just do the best job you possibly can at that race, and then once that's done, you focus on the next race, which most likely would be the next weekend.
Yeah, exactly, and so you're just you're taking it one race at a time, and the power words. I think I gave you sort of a list of power words too. You know, things you can say to yourself. Have those been useful? The kinds of, you know, being able to say some things that are to keep the negative stuff out.
Yeah, I mean for sure. I mean it's almost like any time you have anything negative kind of creeping into your mind, and particularly if the negative happens to be a few aches and pains, which is the toughest thing, I think, to let's say continue to be positive on. Because let's say you have a hamstring situation, a little bit of a hamstring, maybe a little bit of an ankle problem, a little bit of that. That literally, you know, like your power words, you know, those words can be so powerful, and you just start, you know, you think of those words, and you just, again, anything to kind of help you get out of any negative feeling that might be there. Because for sure, this is a sort of challenge, because we're not talking about a challenge where you're running an ultra marathon on one day, or even a three-day race or whatever. This race that I'm doing is a one-year event, and there aren't that many one-year events out there. And certainly over that period of time, and I'm only one-fourth of the way in. Over that period of time, obviously, you know, any sorts of positive thinking, you know, power words, you know, those sort of things, being able to focus on that and to make sure that when you are there at the starting line that you're ready to race again.
Yeah, I think that, really, you've got your body's like constantly in recovery mode. Most people race, train, you know, maybe for 2 or 3 months to get ready for one race, and you do the race and do a peak performance there, and then you've got, you know, a week or two or three or four to recover from that race before you train for the next one. But in your case, you're, you know, doing a race each weekend, and so your body's kind of saying, hey, when do we get time to recover here?
Right, for sure. And definitely, you know, making sure that you're getting enough sleep, making sure that your diet is good, all those things are very, very important. Yeah, and certainly, you know, like this challenge, I think this challenge, let's say, when I was 50 or younger, would have been a lot easier. With the challenge, it would be still a lot of the logistics challenge part, but and the travel part and everything else, but definitely, being, you know, over the age of 60 certainly adds to the challenge, and particularly because it obviously, as we all age, it takes more time to recover, and that's why I make sure that I am getting in the miles during the week. But one of the things that I will also do, and I only actually have started doing this the last 3 or 4 years, is I also include walking part of my program. So like yesterday after racing in Carlsbad on Sunday, on Monday I just went out and walked a couple of miles, and with my son as well, which was also nice. But to be able to just walk, where the day I went out and ran 7 miles, but I kind of mix it up, and I listen to my body, particularly if I feel like there's something happening, let's say if a hamstring or whatever it may be, you know, I'll go ahead and may it be icy hot or a patch or a piece of tape or whatever, and may they really totally work, at least they work mentally, because I'm also addressing the issue at that point in time. And, I'm looking at making sure that all, you know, that I keep all these different things moving in the right direction and continue to step on these starting lines and get the most out of the race.
That's great. Yeah, Bob, I know that even before this, your challenge started, you had an accident, you fell. When did that happen? Can you tell us about that and how you recovered?
Yeah, I tell you, you know, November and December getting ready for this challenge, I was getting in some good mileage and running 50. I think I actually got up to 60 miles a week, which is quite a bit for me because I generally average more like 35 to 40 miles. But anyway, so on December 18th, I was out on a run, which was, you know, just 2 weeks before the start of the challenge, and out on a run, and I was doing 15 miles that day, and I had also stopped at the track, and I do this from time to time, and did four quarters on the track. And anyway, I got out about 11 miles, and a guy that I have known for quite a while, but I had not seen for years, was there, and we started running together. And I mean, for sure, it wasn't his fault or anything like that, but we started talking about a lot of negative sorts of things. I mean, he was talking about all these different operations he's had and how difficult, you know, it has been for him to get back in shape. And there was just a lot of negative ions in the air. And for the first time ever in my life, and we're running maybe 7:15 per mile pace, the next thing I know, I'm laying flat on the ground. I did not break my fall with my hands, which I normally have always in the past did. I was laying on the ground, and I did not pass out. And I had hit my knee, and I had hit my head. And literally, I mean, there was blood everywhere. I mean, it was bad. And luckily, there was a person that I didn't know at all, a total stranger, that was right there within seconds, and she was out walking, and she had some Kleenexes on her, and literally putting that on my head, there was still blood pouring out. I ended up going to the hospital, I had over 60 stitches, a great plastic surgeon whose father is a marathon runner, used to read Runner's World, which was kind of interesting. But anyway, she really took a lot of care in stitching me up, and that's healed up, and hardly a scar. I mean, she just did Joanne did a fantastic job.
Yeah, I saw you afterward, and you looked completely normal.
Oh yeah,
but I saw the photos on your website. Scary stuff.
Well, in fact, actually, for a month after that, almost every step that I took, I was thinking about falling again, and I'm thinking, hey, look, if I keep thinking like this, I mean, it wasn't negative thinking. It was cautious thinking. And every step, you know, I started thinking, oh, my gosh. And any time I would start to trip, I would say, oh, my God, it's going to, you know. But my knee hit first, and literally even now I cannot totally 100%, I mean, maybe it's 98%, bend my knee completely to where I want to bend it. But my first race on New Year's Day, which is only 12 days after this, I mean, that was quite a race. I mean, literally, my left leg at that point was maybe, I could bend it maybe 70%. And that was a challenge. And that particular race, which has been my slowest race of the year so far, I think I averaged 7:15 per mile. But, I mean, that was a struggle. But, so it was crazy. Here it was. December 18th, everything was looking great, and like that, I'm on the ground, you know, with this situation.
Yeah, it makes you realize how precious life is and how quickly things can change, huh?
Yeah, I tell you, you know, in fact, that whole situation, it just really told me how much I appreciate or how everybody should appreciate every moment of life. I mean, things can happen so quickly. And but I really do think that just a lot of negative thoughts in my mind at that time, there was just too much negative stuff. And I was just thinking that, gosh, you know, you don't really realize, you know, you're like, we were only running about 7:15 pace. So what is that, 8 miles an hour or something like that?
Yeah.
That at 8 miles an hour, you do not realize that if you fall, even at that pace, and I didn't trip on anything, I fell on a dirt road. It's amazing what can happen. So the main thing is, hey, you know, positive thinking, and just be aware of what can happen, but that was an unfortunate beginning of the year. But at the same time, instead of saying, well, let's do it later or let's change the challenge or whatever, I'm the sort of person, and I really encourage other people to be the same way. I mean, if you have a goal, I mean, I'm looking at this challenge like it's an event, like it's entering a marathon or an ultra marathon. It just happens to be a one-year event, and it is like an event, and where, you know, I have to reach the 350 miles. So it's just not a matter of doing something every weekend. I mean, that would be an easy thing. It's an event, and nothing's going to stop me. But that was a rocky beginning, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, it's a real testimony to how well you recovered and how powerful the mind is. I think, yeah, if we think of a lot of negative stuff, that negative energy can really go into your body. I know I've been out on runs before where I was really angry about something, a discussion I had with somebody, and then ended up stepping in a pothole and, you know, you've sprained an ankle kind of thing.
I mean, because I've had other sorts of situations, not nearly as bad as this, but yeah, when you just have these, you know, negative thoughts, I mean, negative thoughts create negative things. And,
yeah, and wouldn't it be great if we can use all that power, all that energy to focus on the things that we want in life? You know, your health and your, you know, if it can be that powerful in a negative sense, the positive energy can help you that much more powerfully, you know, to get to your goals, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the mind is incredible, and you know, it's just, you know, it's amazing what it can do. Well, in fact, I mean, I am so amazed. I mean, every time I think about it, where when you ran the San Francisco Marathon and you improved your PR by, what, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
I mean, talking about a powerful situation. How do you do that without your mind just simply getting past that and being able to just go for it? And in fact, I just recently did an interview with a runner. In fact, just posted it, Jerry Lindgren. And in high school, he ran under 14 minutes for a 5K. Unbelievable. I mean, still one of the greatest high school performances ever. And one of the things that he said in the interview is that, you know, he just did not set up barriers. He just went for it. And right from the beginning, he would just go for it. And it just seems like to me that. You know, and we haven't talked in detail about your performance there at the San Francisco Marathon, but it seems like to me to be able to improve by 20 minutes in one race and to win the race, I mean, obviously it was your day, but at the same time, we make our days.
Yeah.
And in my mind, and, I mean, you are, beyond the help that you are providing and helping people achieve their goals. I mean, you are, yourself doing what you did was just amazing.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was just a, yeah, I think that's why, yeah, helping other people with these sports psychology techniques is really gratifying, because I know I've been there myself. And yeah, and you can, when you're out there, you're running so much faster than normal. It's easy to say, God, I hope I don't blow up. What if I, you know, I'm out here in uncharted territory. I don't know if I can do this.
Exactly.
But you have to, you know, just believe in yourself and go with what you have that day.
And that's where, particularly when you're outside your comfort zone, I mean, so many people are very uncomfortable getting outside their comfort zone. But when you're outside your comfort zone, to be able to stay there and move through it, and because, I mean, the way I look at it sometimes, I can, you know, over the years, maybe I'm at that point and I'm definitely outside that comfort zone, but I look at my watch and I think, well, gosh, there's only 10 minutes left. And I can continue pushing and start really visualizing where what I want to be at the end. And I can finish this 10K at 35 minutes and something. Or I could throw the towel in and I could run a really bad last mile and end up at 36 something. And, you know, this is back when I was in my 50s. And what's going to be... what's going to be more satisfying? Is it going to be finishing and probably feeling just as tired running, you know, 36:45, or by keeping pushing and just getting through that and staying positive and finishing, let's say, at 35:30? Hey, it's going to be a much more fulfilling, you know, situation than let's say, you know, throwing the towel in. But at the same time, too, no matter how powerful the mind is, I mean, you still have to put the work in. You still have to, you know, you have to do the training, and you have to be physically ready. But at the same time, you can be physically ready and still push out a better time than, let's say, what you might be able to do, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I think, yeah, it's definitely a combination of both. Yeah, you can't just get by on you can't just visualize doing well. You've got to get out there and do the miles. And I think most people, you know, yeah, do the physical part, but the mental part is that part that's really overlooked. So it's yeah, putting the two together that really makes the difference.
Oh, absolutely.
Having physical confidence.
Because it seems like there's a lot of people who do a lot of training, and but at the same time, I mean, sometimes, you know, time is not important for a lot of people, which is fine. But there are a lot of people, a lot of runners or people who are thinking about getting into running that really are interested in running good times, and they seem to not be able to run good times, but even though they want to. But it seems like that one of the things is that just, you know, they just don't go for it. I mean, literally, let's say if a person is in good enough shape that they could be able to run this time. But in the meantime, so at the starting of the race, they line up, and their time, what they actually could do is a time good enough that they shouldn't be no worse than, let's say, three or four rows back at the starting line. But in the meantime, at the starting line, they're 20 rows back. Also, instead of going out hard, you know, they basically go out with the people around them, and then they hit the mile, you know, at a comfortable pace. Now, I mean, there's obviously different approaches to running. But the next thing you know, then you start, you know, you're getting a little bit tired, and then you start slowing down. So at the end of the day, the person is not satisfied with their performance. And I've always, you know, have told people, and I don't know how you feel about this, but there's the fact that, hey, wait a minute. If you've done the work and you really want to go for it, you need to go for it. And, you know, why not, I mean, you know, not on a big race, but why not, like, on a local race, why not be on the starting line, and why not hit that mile tough? I mean, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? You're going to fall apart? But I would rather, let's say if you think you're going to average 7 minutes per mile, well, gosh, you know, if you hit the first mile at 7:30, how are you going to average 7? I mean, you could. I mean, some people do negative splits and things like that. But at the same time, why not hit that first mile at at 6:30 and see what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe you could hang on. And if you thought you could do 7-minute pace for 10K, well, in the meantime, if you hit that first mile at 6:30, and let's say if your body is just like racing, like, oh, my gosh, am I going to finish or whatever, and then you give into it and you start clicking off bad miles, well, then maybe by the next race you hit the first mile at 6:30 and the second mile at 6:30, and then you fall. I mean, eventually, to me, you know, if you just keep pushing, you could end up getting a good time, but you have to go for it. But you have to also, you know, make sure that, hey, you're there at the starting line, you have a racing singlet on, you have racing shorts on, you have racing shoes on. But if you're there in a sloppy T-shirt, Bermuda shorts or whatever, and training shoes, is that putting your, and 20 rows back, is that putting your mind in the space of getting that good time? I don't think it is. Now, realize that obviously if every single person followed that advice, there'd be way too many people at the starting line.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
But you have to believe in yourself first, I think.
Yeah.
And if you don't believe in it and you don't go for it, you know, you're not going to achieve what you are looking for.
Yeah. Bob, I want to go back a little bit in time. Now, I mean, you were the founder of Runner's World magazine. Can you just tell us a little bit about that whole, starting a major magazine that's now, you know, I don't know how many years later. Can you give us a little bit of a history of how you got the idea to start that magazine? I mean, you started something that's now part of our history, and really it's contributed. It's one of the reasons I started running was reading your magazine and realizing, hey, they're putting women on the cover of a running magazine.
Wow. And in fact, I think we put you on the cover as well, right?
I don't think so.
Right. Oh, okay, maybe.
I wish you, I hope so someday.
Right. But, so basically, so I was in high school, it was 1966, way back when, and I was just absolutely, just totally addicted to running right from the beginning. I mean, running was my whole life, and probably one of the reasons that became my whole life was that in trying out team sports like, you know, baseball and whatever, that, and this is before soccer, and this was back in Kansas. I wasn't really good at team sports, and at the same time, I found that running, you know, that it was just something that I could do, and at age 15, I was able to run like a 2:08 half, which is not a fantastic time, but at the same time, it gave me the confidence and said to me that, wow, I could do something a little bit faster than a lot of other people. And I was not that great as a student as well. For some reason, you know, I'm street smart, but I'm not book smart. And so I just absolutely got just so into running, but not just the aspect of training and racing myself. I was interested in doing more. And so at age 17, I asked my track coach, who, by the way, now is 80 years old. We just saw him at Carlsbad, as we do every year. I asked my track coach if there was anything that I could read about training, whatever, because he could not give me advice. I was already interested in running a marathon. And so he gave me information about a publication called Track and Field News, which is a publication that was out of, or still is being published today out of Los Altos here. And it was, results and of track meets but
nothing on distance running, right?
But yeah, very like nothing to do with road racing. And then basically those were the days where the Beta Breakers was happening, but literally there was less than 100 runners in the Beta Breakers, and the Boston Marathon I think had maybe 100 runners, and there was a few people out there racing. And running marathons, but in total, you know, there might have been, you know, a dozen marathons around the country and all that. But anyway, so I started getting some addresses of people who, in fact, were running marathons and were, training people like Browning Ross and Hal Higdon and other people, Fred Welt, and I mean I could go on and on with a list of people. So I started writing them, and as a 17-year-old boy that was just totally addicted to running, I mean I would come home from school and I would have a letter from like a Hal Higdon or a letter from a Ted Corbett, who was a really ultra marathoning guru, or Browning Ross. And I was getting letters from these people giving me advice and also sharing other names and addresses of people who could also give me advice as to what to do. In the meantime, I decided that I wanted to start collecting information about marathons, and I started like putting down times on note cards. And of course, you know, this is way before the computer.
Right.
and way before you could go to Google and put in anything you want into Google. But so I started like collecting this, and I was actually calling it the Marathon Statistics Bureau. So I was collecting all this information, and as I was getting all this information, I said, on the way, October of 65, on the way to a cross-country meet where Jim Ryan was running and would end up winning this meet by 30 seconds. And I just said to a friend of mine, Dave Zimmerman, I said, you know, I want to start a magazine about running, and I'm going to call it Distance Running News, and we'll do a couple of issues a year, but it's going to be, we're going to run articles about running, and it's going to be articles about all types of running, including articles about women running, which in those days, by the way, a woman was not allowed to run over a half a mile.
That's right, or else we couldn't have babies, right?
Exactly. I mean, mastered running, there was really no such thing as masters running. There was people over the age of 40 running, but there was really no masters age groups or anything like that. So, and as a 17-year-old boy who knew nothing about publishing, who knew nothing about all the, you know, the real detail part of the running world, I just wanted to share with other people. And I thought that if we put together a magazine, that it would work. So basically, up to that point, I was doing some babysitting and mowing lawn, so I had $100 to my name.
Wow.
And I got articles in, and my mom typed up the articles, and I figured out, because my dad had published a book before and I watched him do a few things. Anyway, he typed it up, we reduced the type, and the first magazine was 28 pages. It was a small, like the digest size, 28 pages. I mailed that out. I was $1 a year for a subscription, and sure enough, people started subscribing. People started sending in extra money. Here's $5. I love the magazine. Keep them coming. Here's $5 to help you out. But of course, when you're 17 years old, you know that was a lot of support. Obviously,
yeah, that's amazing. You were doing all this. Had this kind of vision at age 17.
Yeah, and literally, so we published. I printed 1,000 copies of that first issue. And then people were sending in subscriptions, and they were doing it. And then so the next issue came out in July of 1966. And then the next year I did 4 issues, and then the following year after that I did 6 issues. And I just started collecting more information. I went to Kansas State University. I was so busy with the magazine that I literally ended up having to drop out of school. That was a pretty bold move. My parents were totally against that. I actually dropped out in 1969. I already had 10,000 subscribers. One of the things that really helped, I met Bert Nelson, who was the publisher of Track and Field News, and he had 10,000 subscribers. And he agreed to let me rent his mailing list. And I did a mailing, and I also started getting ideas to sell stopwatches and to sell books and things like that. I found some books that were published over in England, and at the same time, I had all these dreams. I had dreams about knowing world record holders and being at the Olympic Games, not as a runner, but as a member of the press. I mean, at one time, as a runner, but then obviously that faded pretty quick.
And having to being able to interview those people and be close to them.
Oh yeah, and literally, I mean, to have, you know, in the end, to have my best friend being Derek Clayton, who held the world record for the marathon for 12 years, and he ended up working for me as my advertising sales director, Runner's World. Right. So literally, I took that $100 and the idea. Now, one of the things, I literally worked day and night, and so I've compensated for my lack of education, formal education. I've compensated all of that, or my lack of knowledge of publishing and all of that, by just putting in endless hours. I mean, for whatever reason, I mean, I can work, and I can still do this. I mean, I can work, you know, 16-hour days and not even blink an eye, and just be, you know, get some rest and be back at it the next day.
Because it's something you're passionate about, right?
Absolutely. I mean, see, and here's the thing. I mean, so I've been doing, you know, so with Runner's World, I mean, so before selling it to Riddell Press, and which was in 1984, you know, we built it up. That same $100, never borrowed a dime after that, never had investors. But so I took that $100, built it to a $25 million company. We also got into other businesses, other magazines. We also published over 100 books on running. Including Dr. Sheehan on Running, The Complete Book of Running. In fact, Dr. Sheehan on Running was on the bestsellers list with quality paperback. We sold the rights to Banta or somebody. I think it was Banta. And it was on the bestsellers list for several months. And we did all sorts of different things. We started Starting Line Sports before there was running shops. In 1972, we started Starting Line Sports and had two stores. We did Olympic tours. We did book clubs. We also had a magazine called The Marathoner that later on Rich Benio actually took that idea and did Marathon Beyond, he mentioned to me recently.
Oh, sure. Yeah, he's had several of my articles in there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it was one of these things that, you know, I mean, you know, the only thing about it is I started the magazine. At first it was called Distance Running News. I changed the name when I moved to California in 1969 at Christmas time. I put everything in a 10-foot truck, moved to California, changed the name to Runner's World. You know, at the peak, before we sold, and the reason why I sold, I mean, unfortunately with all of this, you know, all this going on, 350 employees, all these different magazines and books and newsletters and all this stuff. And we did the Corporate Cup Relays, the Fun Run program, the 24-hour relay, the National Running Week, expos, yeah. All the other. We had all this stuff going. So exciting. In fact, even like, and as my wildest dreams, I mean, were basically a kid barely making it into school with $100. I mean, I even ended up being able to interview President Reagan in the Oval Office.
Wow.
For Runner's World.
That's amazing.
And but anyway, with all this, the one thing that really suffered was my marriage. And so there was a point where my wife, Rita, I mean, you know, she said, well, you know, it just is not working, da 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 da. And two fantastic kids, Mike and Lisa, and Rita and I are still friends today, but she said, you know, it just isn't working. So divorce, and the only way to settle the divorce was to sell the magazine. And so in 84, I did sell the magazine to Riddell Press, and then I had to do a no-compete clause, so I couldn't do anything at all in running officially for 5 years. So I kind of just stepped aside. But that was really tough. The only thing that was great about it was the fact that Runner's World, publishing Runner's World, took me away from my own personal running. I only ran on weekends. And pretty much my only races were the fun runs.
Yeah, so all you're starting this business around running, but so it's bringing in tons of money and prestige for you, and serving so many millions of people. But one thing it was suffering is your own running and your own life.
Absolutely, but at the same time, I have to say it was publishing Runner's Row was so exciting, but at the same time, as I was learning as I was going along. So, I wasn't a business major. I wasn't following the footsteps of my dad. He was a school teacher. And literally, I wasn't sure what to do.
Yeah, you didn't have the kind of background that a lot of people have. So you just said I had to learn as you went along. You must have had mentors and people showing you the way.
Well, for sure. I mean, there was a lot of people, but a lot of it was learning as I went along.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I didn't realize, so like when I was like 25 and I had 100 people working for me, I didn't realize that, hey, if I wanted to take off an hour during the day to get a run in, if that was something that I wanted to do, that I could do it. I had the feeling, or it was my understanding that basically I would come into work at 7 o'clock in the morning and I would leave at 8 o'clock at night, and that literally my door was always open, and basically I became kind of a slave to the people that were working for me, that I was always available for them. Now, at the same time, I just could not shut off the ideas. I mean, literally, and I would say, okay, yeah, that's a great idea. Like one time, we decided to start a magazine. I decided to start a magazine called New Mother. And literally, from the time we had the idea to the time the first issue was actually printed, we're talking about like 5 weeks.
Wow.
And that literally, there was nothing. I felt there was nothing I could not do. Unfortunately, if I had more capital, so many of these ideas, like running stores and expos for races and the corporate cup relays and National Running Week. I mean, a lot of these ideas, could have been businesses in themselves. And like we had the midnight race. I think you ran the midnight race.
Yeah, I did. Right, that was wonderful that you put that on.
Yeah, wasn't that fantastic? We had all these great runners there. And
oh,
it was
yeah.
a 5-mile course. It was a great location.
I think Greta Waits came, I think, and all kinds of people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had Greta Waits. We had Bill Rogers. We had Frank Shorter. I mean, and we had everybody. But to make a long story short, so by selling Runner's World, I was able to get refocused on my own running. And now, I mean, it's just really fantastic that, recently being able to get some websites going with the Eugenia Fit Club, the Best Road Races, and now working on this film project. But certainly, the Runner's Row story and developing that and being able to put together a group of outstanding writers and to really, get a lot of people into racing. I mean, it was just really, really fantastic. And the things that would really make my day, and we got many letters like this, I would receive a letter, this is before emails, a letter from someone that would say, thank you for saving my husband's life. He was overweight, he got into running, he saw a copy of Runner's World at the newsstand, he got into running, now he's into racing, he's in the best shape of his life, and thank you for saving his life because I was positive that he, at this point in time, it could have been really bad.
Yeah, stuff like that just, makes tears come down.
Yeah, I mean, it was really
heartwarming.
Very heartwarming, absolutely.
Yeah, the things that, when you get that big like that, you don't realize all the different individual people you're touching. And what a great movement. I mean, it was really a phenomenon that you started.
Well, you know, and also, you know, when Jim Fix did the book, you know, the complete, was it complete book of running?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I've got it here on my shelf.
Yeah, and he did a chapter on Runner's Row, and he, you know, it was like Runner's Row. It was our cult following, and it really was. I mean, we just had. I mean, anybody that was really into racing and into being, you know, being a serious runner was reading Runner's World, and we had a, you know, like 2 million readers, and it was just so fabulous to have been at the beginning and to see that evolve, and that literally, I mean, how often do people, you know, their wildest dreams, how often do people's wildest dreams come true? But in my case, my wildest dreams came true. And even though, most of them. And the type of dream that didn't come true, I mean, at one point, you know, I myself wanted to be, you know, a world-class runner. But realizing that something had to be sacrificed. And I did sacrifice my own running. But at the same time, you know, I could have been a good runner. I could have, maybe I could have run a 10K in 32 minutes, but that's not a world-class level. And so at the same time, you know, I was not able to do that because I didn't have the time because I was so in, or I didn't make the time. I was so involved with Runner's World. But you know, I mean, the world didn't need another guy. I mean, for the world not to have another guy running 32 minutes versus that same person putting that same energy into Runner's World that would turn on, you know, literally millions of people into running and to really help us, you know, get better shoes and people communicating and all the other things. Is that I think that the sacrifice that I made back in those days, you know, is, you know, was certainly very worth it. At the same time, now, this is why I'm so excited about this present challenge that I have, is that...
And now we've come full...
I also believe that a lot of people are not doing a lot of things because, you know, they think they're too old.
Yeah. Yeah, now we've come full circle, and you've started out as a runner, and then you did Runner's World, and kind of running was in the background for you, and now coming full circle back to your putting running as a central part of your life again, right?
Absolutely, and that now also saying that age is just a number now, because quite honestly, I really feel that there are just too many people that over the age of 60, particularly, that have just they're thinking that they're too old to be pushing or well, I've already run hard or whatever. Well, I tell you, you know, it's still, I mean, you know, right now I can't imagine myself not being a runner. Now, if something were to happen as an accident or whatever, knock on wood, you know, I would figure something out some way or another. But at the same time, I'm just thinking is that you know, as the clock is ticking, a lot of people aren't out there anymore, and that actually concerns me. Now, I know in some cases, I mean, running can be pretty tough on the knees or whatever it may be, or the, you know, on a person's body. But again, you just have to figure out a way of making it work. And yeah, I've come completely full circle where now a lot of my emphasis is on running. I mean, I'm still running a company that's not directly related to running, but at the same time, what comes first in my life right now? Running.
Yeah.
I mean, at the same time, I mean, you know, I say that, but my kids, you know, working with my kids, my daughter, you know, we work together in a business, and obviously with Catherine, and the other thing that's really great, is when I was publishing Runner's Row, again, not knowing how to handle it, that at first, so I was still, you know, I was still able to run quite a bit, and then as the years went on, and I got more and more employees, that basically it got to the point that during the week, you know, I would not, like if a friend called up, I would basically say, I'm sorry, I don't have the time to talk. And literally, I basically, my whole life was my business. And what's really great right now is like with the focus being back on running and making this documentary a long run, what's really great, it's just like in 2 weeks, we're going back to Kansas. I haven't raced in Kansas since 1969.
And that's where you're from?
Kansas. I haven't seen my brother in Manhattan, Kansas for 18 years. I haven't been back to my high school since I left in 69. Well, I'm going back. You know, they're going to have me be the starter at a track meet.
Wow.
They're going to do, you know, some sort of presentation or whatever at the, you know, at their 50th anniversary. That happens to be the same weekend. Da 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 da. And I'm able to, you know, I'm taking the time to do things. And and even more recently, like, you know, the opportunity where you and I and Bill Dunn and Rich Stiller, we were able to during the week go out for a little training run.
Yeah, that was.
I was publishing Runner's Rule. I would never do that because I thought that business guys would not do that.
Yeah, that was really special that day. It was a holiday, right?
President's Day. But you know, things like that are very special, and it's also, you know, being able to spend time with people that you've known, but you really realize that you've known a lot of people, but you just basically knew them, you know, at races, and you would say hi, and that would be it. And to be able to now take the time to really get to know people, I'm just loving every minute of this. Absolutely. I mean, this is, I'm back to my grassroots. I'm back to the foundation of Distance Running News, and that became Runner's World, and I'm back to the grassroots, and it is feeling great.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I remember that day we went out running on a Monday, and it was such a nice, it was just easy, yeah, easy run, just being able to talk and chat and not be competitive, but just enjoy the act of running and just enjoy the social part of it. You know?
Absolutely. I loved every minute of that.
Yeah, that was fun. And now you created this wonderful community, a different kind of community of runners through Eugenia Fit Club. It's for everyone on the call. It's UJENA Fit Club, right?
.com,
and which I'm a member of and part of, and it's a fantastic resource for everyone. It's you know, where you can join and for free, and you put in your profile and your running history, and I know Bill's put in something like 625 races.
Exactly.
You can put in your whole running history, and it's got this fantastic software where you can, you know, put in your race, and it tells you your pace, and it tells you know, it brings up your whole running history, and you can basically use it as an online logbook, and also use it as a social networking for other runners, just bringing people together, right?
Yeah, totally. You know, in fact, I'm just really enjoying that because, you know, we have a wide range of people who are part of our Eugenia Fit Club, and it's growing every day, and it's like that grassroots type of thing, you know, and it's not that real serious sort of thing, and at the same time, you know, it's really exciting to be doing something new and something that people are enjoying it's really been quite nice and we have Eugenia primarily, we're a swimwear company and being the sponsor and our webmaster I think has really done a super job of putting together a site that is easy to use, and it's so great to see. I mean, to be able to take a look at like Bill Dunn's profile as an example, or your profile, and see races that have been run in the past, and see how the age graded aspect of it, and then looking toward races that people are going to run, and you know, the log in workouts, and in fact, actually, you know, that's you know, with the Fit Club, well, before the Eugenia Fit Club, you know, I was not, I wasn't keeping up with like Bill Dunn's training every day, and there I was able to follow his training because he posts every day.
Yeah, but you're about the same age group, the same age.
Yep, we're in the same, and literally, and that's where, just looking at his training, that's where I had put on there that I thought he could run under 68 minutes for a 10-mile race, you know, just last weekend. And sure enough, that's what he ran.
Yeah, you ran it. You had a perfect prediction for him.
and that, but literally, it was because of the fact I was able to follow what he was doing. And the other thing is, I know, I've been running for 50 years, and for whatever reason, I am motivated by our Eugenia Fit Club and the fact that you know, we keep points for training and things like that. And I literally have run some additional miles just to get some additional points, you know, just for myself. And it's kind of cool to be able to post what you're doing and things like that. I mean, of course, you know, I mean, when you have the fantastic sites like Facebook that just reaches everybody, this is like a niche sort of boutique networking site. But at the same time, too, it's not set up like some of the really real serious sorts of running sites. This is where it's more of a grassroots sort of site, and that where you can be 64 years old, or you can be 79, or you can be 15, and still enjoy it. And at the same time, there are runners, there are people there that are posting workouts that are just getting started with running, or maybe they're even doing bicycling, or they're doing aerobic type workouts or whatever it may be, and so we're not like screening it out and saying you have to be a runner to be part of this. Is that it's anybody who's interested in being fit, and as we're saying, inspiring a fitness revolution. Because as we look around, as we all look around, there are just way too many people that are not fit in this country and around the world, and life is just so much better being fit.
Yes, and, absolutely.
And if we can help people, help inspire people to be fit, you know, that's what it's all about. But what we do, and my approach to that is, I like to do things that I get something out of myself personally. I'm thinking is that if I'm getting something out of it, there's a lot of other people just like me. And that's how we have really put this together, and getting feedback, asking people what is it they would like, and all of that. Because it's all about helping other people, getting motivated, inspiring them. And the bottom line is that, you know, we need to get more people fit. It would help so much, and if we can be part of that, hey, all the better.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, well, that's great. I think the Eugenia Fit Club is a fantastic thing that you're doing, and I'm recommending it to all my list of people and on my website, and so yeah, I congratulate you for what you're doing, and I'm really excited about getting the word out there for you.
Absolutely, and we're really looking forward to posting your interview on our site at EugeniaFitClub.com, and we're interviewing 100 interesting people, and obviously you, Dr. Joanne, for sure is one of the 100 interesting people, and your interview is some great stuff there, and content, and we're looking forward to getting that posted here very soon. And
Thanks.
I mean, the Fit Club, the Eugenia Fit Club, we're very excited about it, and we're very excited to have you as a member. And it's really been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks.
We're going to continue to develop it and turn it into a lot of things. Also, you know, we do best road races, where we have selected about 140 races now that we feel are races that are worthy of being mentioned. Of course, there's a lot more, and we'll continue to add. CAD races, and you know, just doing different things. And the way that we do things, I mean, it will continue to evolve. But it's all about our, you know, the people who go there, the people who go to that site, and you know, as you mentioned, it's totally free, and we have no idea. I mean, right now we're just financing it, and Eugenia is financing it, and you know, we have no idea where that's going to head. But that's no different than the way when I started Runner's World, when I started Distance Running News. Hey, I didn't know where it was headed. I didn't start it to make money. I didn't start it to have 350 employees. I didn't start it thinking that I would end up with over 2 million readers and that it would give me everything I've ever wanted financially. My thinking is just if you just do something, you believe in it, you put a lot of hard work behind it, and you continue to improve, that everything else will come its way. But at the same time, you do need to run something where you can be really passionate about something, but if you forget the fact that somehow or another you need to figure out how to pay the bill, because any way you slice it, you know, to live in this life, it does cost money. Phones cost money. Rent takes money. Food takes money. So somehow or another you have to figure out. But at the same time, if you just believe in what you're doing, you work really, really hard, and you just make sure that you figure out a way of how you're going to exist, but you never compromise on what you're doing, it all works out. So even like with a Fit Club, where it's going to go, whatever, hey, as long as we're reaching a lot of people and we're sharing ideas, whatever, somehow or another we'll figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's great. Well, thank you, Bob Anderson, so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
And hey, thanks so much, and really appreciate all of your support, and I just love all of your ideas, and certainly your positive energy is coming my way, and I really, really appreciate you asking me to, you know, be interviewed. It makes me feel proud that you would think of me to be part of your program.
Sure. Yeah, that sounds great. All right. Well, if you can hang on for just a moment.
Okay.